from the Missouri School of Journalism. Welcome to Global Journalist. When the Saudi Arabian journalist Jamal Khashoggi was killed and dismembered by a Saudi hit squad in Turkey, the story generated international headlines for days. It caused a major rift between Saudi Arabia and foreign investors, and even triggered the US and UK to call for a ceasefire in Saudi Arabia's war in Yemen. But in 2017 and 2018, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists, at least 100 other journalists were killed around the world. Unfortunately, for the most part, their deaths don't generate anywhere near the same level of reaction. So on today's edition of Global Journalist, we're going to talk about two investigative journalists in Europe who were murdered while working on investigations highlighting corruption or links between politicians and organized crime. In both cases, justice for those responsible for the killings has been slow in coming. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to talk about Daphne Caruana Galizia. She was a crusading investigative journalist in the Mediterranean island nation of Malta. Galizia was killed in a car bombing in October 2017. But first, we're going to talk about the case of a Slovakian journalist named Jan Kuciak. The 27-year-old Kuciak and his fiancée, Martina Kusnirova, were shot and killed in their apartment last February. Kuciak wrote for the Slovakian news site Actuality and had been investigating links between Slovak politicians Ndrangheta, an organized crime family based in southern Italy. For more on this, we're going to bring in two people who have worked with Kuciak and helped continue reporting the stories he was working on when he was killed. Joining us from the Slovakian capital, Bratislava, is Martin Turcik. He's an investigative reporter for Actuality, the news site where Kuciak once worked. And with us from the Czech capital, Prague, is Pavla Holsova. She's the founder of the Czech Center for Investigative Journalism. Pavla, welcome. If I could start with you, Kuciak, he was a young reporter. He had been working on some big stories at the time of his death. Give us just a brief overview of what it was he was investigating when he was killed.
Well, shortly before Jana was murdered, he was working on exposing ties between organized crime business and politicians. The last story that actually was published only a couple of days after his murder, we've done together with our Italian partners from IRPI, and it was actually exposing the links between the most powerful Italian mafia, 'Ndrangheta, and the Prime Minister.
And so immediately it seemed like a lot of suspicion fell to these links between the mafia and the prime minister. And Martin Turcik, if I could bring you in, there was actually a huge outpouring of public protest following Jan's killing. Talk to us about that.
Yes, immediately after the murder, we felt tremendous support from the public, which said that the attack on journalism is an attack on the whole society. And 100,000 people marched through the streets of Slovakia after the murder to remind what Jan was working on and to protest against not just the murder itself, but also against the corruption in Slovakia that Jan was writing about and to support journalism itself.
And the Prime Minister, Robert Fico, he had to resign, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, the protests also demanded political changes, and not just the Prime Minister, also Ministry of Interior Robert Kaliňák had to step down after the protest, and we now have slightly changed government from now on.
Well, Martin, talk to us about just what happened inside your news organization. What was it like in the days after Jan's death?
The very first days after Jan's death were very hectic and very difficult to work because we were overwhelmed with grief, with questions. We basically stopped working as a newsroom for a brief 1 or 2 days. After that, we published Jan's last article about connections between Prime Minister Robert Fico and businessmen connected to Italian 'Ndrangheta. So that's where our real work began, and the whole thing just made the whole newsroom closer and made sure that we have to work harder than ever before.
Pavla, if I could turn this back to you, there have been several arrests in Jan's killing. It's been reported that there was a hired assassin who killed him, and there was payments of about 70,000 euros to those involved in murdering him. Who are the people that have been arrested?
Well, nothing much was known about them before the detentions. Those were people who, one of them used to work as a police investigator, the others was kind of a military trained person who was hired by private companies to protect the boats in when they were actually crossing the sea close to Somalia, to protect those boats against the pirates. One of them was actually a woman who served as a kind of a middleman between the one who ordered the murder and those who pulled the trigger.
And well, I want to ask you, have there been charges against those who are said to have masterminded? It sounds like the people who have been arrested, the gunmen, a driver, and some people who are sort of go-betweens passing orders. I mean, has the mastermind of this or the person who ordered this been arrested?
There is one lead suspect in the investigation so far. He was not charged with the murder so far.
Well, this is something that I want to come back to then, because Martin, one of the things that Jan had been known for was reporting the links between Kusiak's death and the 'Ndrangheta crime family in southern Italy. In what way is that family involved in business in eastern Slovakia? How did Jan and your organization report on this?
Jan worked on this story for the last 3 months of his life very, very intensely. He found out that this family came to Slovakia in the late 90s, and they were also known to have unregistered weapons and smuggle drugs. And what Jan was writing about was the fraud of agricultural funds or European Union funds by these people.
Okay, so these are like subsidies from the European Union to Slovakia for farming projects, for agricultural projects then.
Exactly. Those were the money used by the so-called farmers and frauded because they had connections to government and the Ministry of Agriculture. Among their political connections were connections directly to the office of the government, the prime minister and his assistant, and the head of the Security Council in Slovakia, who did business with the very Italian businessmen that were suspected of this fraudulent behavior.
Okay. And Pavel, as you point out, this was actually a part of a wider investigative project involving a number of investigative journalists across different countries. But Pavel, I wanted to ask you as well about sort of a separate story that he had reported on. This is about a prominent Slovak businessman named Marian Kočner. Kusiak had examined some of his business dealings in the past, some real estate ventures, and written about him. What do we know about Mr. Kočner?
Maybe this is the question you should ask to Martin, because I was not at the editorial team that was covering the dealings and the political links of Marian Kočner towards the...
Okay, sure, Martin, why don't you take this then?
Of course, Marian Kočner is a prolific suspect of many fraudulent behaviors and many fraudulent businesses. He's mostly known for tax fraud and tax evasion that Jan was reporting on. Jan uncovered a number of scandals where Kočner is charged right now. So he had every motivation to move against Jan because his very freedom is now challenged also by Jan's stories.
And correct me if I'm wrong, one of the people arrested in Jan's death actually worked for this businessman Kočner.
Yes, that's right. And another of those arrested people are speaking about the Kočner being the one who ordered the murder, but it's not an official information.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Pavla, I wanted to ask you about the reaction of the Slovak authorities soon after Jan's death. You went to Slovakia to investigate this for yourself. Talk to us about your experiences there.
Well, I could not go immediately to Slovakia because I got police protection and I was living under police protection for a couple of months.
Okay, so you yourself felt threatened and needed police protection immediately after this killing.
I didn't ask for it. I just got it, me and my whole family. But I was brought to Slovakia to give witness testimonies twice The first one, it took about 1 hour. It was really short, and it did not really, the questions were not really related to the work we've done with Jano. The second was much more intense. It took 7 hours, and it ended up with Slovak police seizing my phone.
Okay, so it sounds like you yourself were treated as a suspicious person then, rather than a witness.
Yes, they definitely treated me like I was involved in the murder.
Okay. All right, and so obviously there's some political sensitivities with the work that he had been doing. But Martin, could you talk to us just generally about how this killing has impacted Slovak journalists? I should imagine that it would make them more reluctant to do these types of politically sensitive stories, stories about corruption, stories about the mafia.
Quite the opposite, actually. We now have more coverage of investigative journalism in basically every media in Slovakia. At least that's my view, that people are more willing to uncover such stories and to publish such stories after Jan was murdered.
And well, Pavle, if I could ask you as well, there have been political changes in Slovakia, as Martin was talking about, as a result of this. There have been some arrests. Are you confident that justice will be served, that the masterminds, if you will, the people who ordered this killing, the person who ordered this killing, that they will face justice?
I hope so. That's the only thing I can do, actually, because I'm not working in any kind of authorities, and I'm not even living in Slovakia. I'm not even a Slovak citizen. So I can only judge it from abroad and hope.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you get the sense that this killing, it was just an anomaly in a country that's basically a fairly free place for journalists to work? Or is it, you know, maybe a sign that there's some underlying problems?
I think the country started to heal. There are more and more information coming out and being exposed every day about how the system worked and how the system was corrupted and twisted. But I think once this is exposed, there's a time to deal with it and to fix it. And it's happening right now.
And Martin, I'd be interested in your reaction to that as well. Do you think that the fundamental change is coming to Slovakia as a result of this?
I think we definitely are seeing some changes to the better, mostly. But I don't think we can call it fundamental change by now. Hopefully in the future, but it's, let's call it baby steps.
And do you get the sense that corruption overall, then this whole episode, Jan's death, has shown a strong light on corruption in Slovakia? Do you think that overall this is helping to diminish it, that it will diminish the role of organized crime in Slovakia, or is this just going to be something that 5 years from now people, you know, people will look back on it and say that didn't make much of a difference at all?
I'm sure that it's helping to diminish corruption, but a lot more slowly than I expected at first. What I was expecting was a principle change of people rejecting corrupt behavior when they see that it can lead to murder, but that it didn't happen. We still have to struggle for even small diminishing of corruption in Slovakia.
Well, Pavla Holsova, Martin Turček, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
A reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, we're talking about two recent murders of European investigative journalists who are probing political corruption and organized crime. We just spoke with Martin Turček of Actuality SK and Pavla Holsova of the Czech Center for Investigative Journalism about the legacy of the murdered Slovak journalist Jan Kuciak. Next, we're going to talk about a journalist from Malta named Daphne Caruana Galizia. She was killed in a car bombing in 2017 while she was working on a number of sensitive stories, including the sale of Maltese passports. For more on the story she was working on and the investigation into her death, we're going to bring in Laurent Richard. He's in Berlin. He's the executive director of Forbidden Stories, a project that continues the work of journalists who are killed, imprisoned, or threatened. Laurent, welcome.
Hi.
And also with us to talk about Daphne's case, as well as other threats to journalists in Europe, is Gulnoza Said. She's the Europe and Central Asia Program Coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists. Gulnoza, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, let me start with you, Gulnoza. Tell us just a little bit about the life of Daphne Caruana Galizia. She was a fairly well-known figure in Malta, a source of irritation to some powerful people in this country's government.
That's a very good description of Daphne. That's true. She's been reporting and doing investigative reporting in particular for many years, and she's been known as one woman WikiLeaks, a crusader who reported on many issues that nobody else ever dared to raise in Malta, in a country that, despite being a member of the European Union, is one of the most corrupt countries in that region. And so in a way, her killing was not surprising, as bad as it sounds. I understand how it sounds. And the difference between Daphne and Jan Kuciak, about whom we, other people spoke just before me, is that unfortunately, unlike the situation in Slovakia, we haven't seen much of a solidarity on the side of the Maltese people as well as the journalistic community. The solidarity and certain calls to end impunity in her case. And as you know, although it's been many months since her killing in October 2017, the murder is still, nobody has been brought to justice for her murder.
Well, I want to come back to that, Gulnoza, because you raised some interesting points there. But Laurent Richard, if I could bring you in. At the time that Daphne was killed, I believe this was October 2017, she was working on a number of investigations. And part of what's interesting is that you and some other journalists decided to follow up on them. Why did you decide to do this, and who was involved?
We decided to continue the work of Daphne because Daphne was investigating critical topics, such as you mentioned before, the selling of a passport, Maltese passport, means that was a European passport, but she was also investigating corruption issues or organized crime cases. So she was, because she was investigating major issues for the public opinion, we decided that we, 45 reporters from Europe, but also from the US with a New York Times partner, to continue the very important work of Daphne, and not only to find who might be the behind the killing, but also to make sure people get access to critical information, since she was working on critical stories.
And in a way, it seems like this, it's actually working against the goals of what the people who had her killed. They wanted to stop a story, obviously, by continuing her work. It seems like you're trying to thwart them in that. But let's talk about some of the stories she had been working on. Laurent, Daphne had, she'd blogged about this mysterious company named 17 Black Limited, and ultimately your project's reporting was able to connect this sort of mysterious company that she had been written about to a man who had won a $500 million energy project from the Maltese government. Talk to us about the findings of this reporting.
Well, we, with the 45 reporters who were part of the Daphne project, we worked for 6 months, and then at the end we were able to reveal many important points. One aspect of the revelation was about the profile of one important person inside the government, the Ministry of Economy, who, according to several witnesses, were seen with the people who are suspected to have triggering the bomb on the day Daphne were killed. Other revelation, as you mentioned, was the revelation and explanation about what is happening in Azerbaijan, in Malta, sorry. That you have some person inside the government who can have some bank account in some offshore companies, and you have some suspicious company and suspicious link between companies and officials were set it up in some tax haven. So and this is all linked, of course, to some businesses such as the energy sector. So Daphne was investigating very important topics and very complex things, and she was one of the only voice in Malta. So we did our best, and we are doing our best to continue to continue the story.
And there were multiple stories that she was working on, but this one in particular, it led back, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it led back to people directly within the government who had set up offshore accounts that were going to take payment from this mystery company, which was ultimately controlled by someone who had just won a huge government contract here. So it seemed like it might be a cover for a way for kickbacks to be paid.
Yes, absolutely. But the problem is that we did this investigation, and in some normal democracy where press freedom exists, you can have some interviews, and we did some 40 requests for getting some answers on that specific case of 17 Black, but also on other cases. And the government of Malta never accepted any kind of interview. So that's just to tell you what kind of what's happening in that part of Europe, and that's quite concerning because we're talking about European Union, and we're talking about organized crime, corruption, and selling some of citizenship.
Well, Gunnuza Said, I think this is part of what is perhaps frustrating about Daphne's case is that, as with this story about this mystery company, 17 Black, and a number of her other stories, she's implicating people high up in the Maltese government. And yet, I think there are these questions about whether or not those same people are in some way influencing the investigation into her death. Talk to us just a little bit about this issue of independence of the investigation into her death.
Yes, I have to mention that we traveled to Malta on the first anniversary of Daphne's killing, along with representatives of other press freedom organizations, and we met with Prime Minister Muscat, who you're showing right now, and other officials from law enforcement who are in charge of the investigation. And we requested that they launch a public inquiry into an independent one into the killing, because we don't believe that the current process that's been going on for almost a year now since the arrest of several men implicated in the killing is going to bring any results. And also there is no deadline in what is going on right now, and there is no date for the trial in the case, and we also don't believe that the masterminds are in custody. So
I'm sorry, so just recap for us, who are these men who have been arrested then?
The three men who, as the Maltese law enforcement indicated, were involved in the execution itself, but we don't know who the masterminds are, and our main goal at CPJ is that the masterminds are named and also brought to justice. And we believe that the independent inquiry into the case would help to achieve that goal. And unfortunately, we haven't seen any political will on the side of the Maltese authorities, including the Prime Minister, to start such an independent investigation.
Well, I mean, do you think the fact that she had reported on the Prime Minister's wife holding some of these offshore accounts where money was flowing, or members of his cabinet or his chief of staff, do you think that that may be a reason why there isn't much interest in pursuing this investigation?
Well, I think you're asking a very right question, and I guess you know the answer, because Prime Minister Muscat still continues with the defamation lawsuit against Daphne, despite the fact that she hasn't been alive for a long time. And the case is now against her son, who is also an investigative journalist, Matthew Caruana Galizia. And it is ridiculous, but Daphne was a subject of more than 40 defamation and libel lawsuits when she was alive, and some 30 of them are still there. And some officials who filed those lawsuits, including Prime Minister Muscat, haven't dropped those cases against her.
Well, let me turn this back to Laurent then, because I want to talk a little bit more about Daphne's work as well. Another one of the stories that she was working on that your organization and other journalists followed up on was about Malta's online casino industry. I think Malta is home to something like 300 online casinos, and this was of great interest to Daphne before her death, because I understand there were links to Italian organized crime with those as well.
Yes, absolutely. That was one of the investigations she was working on. But just to answer the previous question, the main problem with the Daphne killing investigation is that Malta is a quite tiny island with something like 400,000 people living there approximately. And Daphne was investigating whether the people were on the left or on the right were investigating businesses, politicians, and she had so many enemies, actually, because she was really an independent journalist. So that's why even as a journalist, it was complicated to start an investigation.
So there's really sort of a panoply of different suspects. There are so many people that she organized and antagonized.
Absolutely, but at the end of that, that you would find all the time the very same people inside the government who have some links with companies, of course, and with some specific lawyers on the island, and so that's where we are now. And it's quite it's very rare when you have that kind of killing in a country of an EU member state. And it was in October 2017. We are in January 2019, and the mastermind is not yet under arrest. So we just have two guys who are suspected to have triggered the bomb, used some cell phones to make the explosion possible under the seat of Daphne, and they didn't talk. They didn't reveal who ordered the killing. So probably they get some protection. Probably the authorities locally are not able to investigate independently. We don't know, because nobody's answering our question, which is quite unique. So in a kind of democracy, when you want to know the truth, you need at least have one government who is respecting press freedom, especially when it's coming after the killing of
Well, Laurent, sorry, we're just about out of time. Sorry. But quickly then, are you optimistic that we will ever find out that there will ever be justice in this case?
Well, I think, of course, on our end, we will never give up, and we will continue the work, and we to try to find who might be the killers and continue the important work of Daphne. The thing is that I would be much more optimistic if the EU authorities would play really a real role of authorities as a chief of the European Union, and making sure that if you are a member state, you need to comply with the EU values and then to respect press freedom and things like that. But what we see after the publication of the Daphne project, we didn't see too much, too many difference now so far, many months
after. So in other words, then it sounds like the ball is maybe in the European Union's court then to spur Malta to get on top of this case, because they're not doing it on its own. Unfortunately, we're out of time for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism, KBIA, Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Gulnoz Saeed, Laurent Richard, Pavla Holtsova, and Martin Turchek. Our producers this week are Rosemary Belson and Edom Kasaye. Grace Lett is visual editor. Aaron Hay is audio engineer. Travis McMillan is director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.